Vedana is usually translated as feeling. Vedana is the second foundation, and it's actually something that we all know. We're now in a territory which is very familiar as Dharma practitioners. Every retreat, it's there. So we're coming down off the sort of rather unknown territory of nama rupa and consciousness that we've been busy with all up to now, and sankharas and senses, which are a little bit not the usual practice that we are used to in the Vipassana community. And we're now in familiar territory, which is the sixth of the links in Paticchasamuppada, Vedana. And it's also the second foundation of the four foundations of mindfulness. And it's usually translated as feeling, but it's actually same, it's also known, because it's the same root Veda, Yeda, same root, comes from Sanskrit. The Vedas are knowing. The Vedana is knowing quality, heart-mind quality. Yeda, same. And vidya, it's all come from the same root, know. So we're talking about a knowing here. We're not talking about just feelings that are not known. There is feelings that are known. It's a quality of knowing the world, in other words, through the heart and not just through thought. It's the way we know the world. And that's important to understand. We know the world because we respond to the world. And it's like it's the same in the Bible, where sex, love is, yeah, Sarah, is it, you know, a sexual love is seen as knowing. Why? Because it's a process of knowing, experiencing. In perhaps the most strongest way, experiencing the other in a very strong way, through not just thought, but through the whole being. So it's part of knowing, it's part of sensing, it's part of experiencing, and it's in every impression, it's in every moment of our experience. Even if we don't recognize it as having a feeling quality, it has. And the way I like to think about it is, imagine we were a computer which is just processing things where there's no feeling. For a computer, every processing is equal. There isn't any sense that this is more important than anything else. And in Vedana, it's not like that. It's the way we choose to look at something. We choose all the time that this is of interest and that's not of interest, and it's choosing because it's liking or not liking. And if it's there's also neutral, the third. A neutral we tend to be bored with, so we just don't go there, and we tend to go with what we like or don't like. So it's attraction or not attraction, or aversion, and it's very fast and very immediate. And Vedana is very, very fast, it's inside experience. And I think we've a little bit got to go out of the Western mind here, which ever since the kind of the Greeks, there has been a tendency to split mind and heart in the Western world. So the Greek time and Aristo and so on created a sense of respect for the thinking process, a rational mind, the mind that's intelligence and so on, that in Western culture quite strongly. It never really was there in the Eastern culture. The Eastern culture has never really separated mind and heart. They're very much intimate. And that's why in Tibet, you know, I think I said that, maybe I told that story about someone, a Tibetan that was being tested in a laboratory in America, and he was laughing as the scientist put probes on the mind, on the skull, and he was laughing, and the scientist said, "Well, why are you laughing?" He said, "Well, I'm because you're putting all these probes in the wrong place." That's not where I know things. I don't think there, I think here. They should be here, the probes. So in the East, it's mind, heart go very well together, and citta even is mind, heart, is defined as mind, heart. Bodhicitta is the mind, heart awareness. So just to be aware of that. It's very, very deep. One of the nicest little images I have is from a Dharma article I read, where this woman was talking about, a Dharma teacher was talking about her experiences in a laboratory when she was at school, and she noticed they were doing experiments with amoeba. And she noticed how, in the experiment in school, they gave a little drop of sugar and all the amoeba went there, and they gave a little drop of vinegar and then all the amoeba ran away from it. And so even at the level of amoeba, one cell, ta'echad, it's already got liking and not liking. It's so deep inside us, this liking, not liking. It's really essentially, so that's why it's a foundation of mindfulness, because it's as powerful as body. Body, you could say, is, you know, basic. You can't even imagine without a body. You can't imagine without liking and not liking. It's very basic. It's all life. And, you know, I mentioned last time, I think last session, how we build a world from FS1% of all the impressions and sensations that we experience in 99.999% we forget and we ignore and we don't know and we just wipe out. What is it that makes the FS1% relevant? It's liking, not liking. What's interesting for us? So what's interesting drives the attention. The attention goes to what's important. What's important is usually connected with our survival. So liking, not liking is where our survival is talking to us. Dachaf lisrod is talking to us through Vedana, through liking, not liking. Pain, obviously, bodily pain, heart pain, that keeps us very busy. It takes us over. Fear is not liking. Takes us over. Our whole life we're busy with it. We're building our whole life. I mean, if you think of people accumulating possessions, money, car, whatever they need to do, protection, their whole life from birth to death is busy with it. Why? Because they're working with, they're devoting themselves really to Vedana. What I don't like, and I'm busy with trying to prevent what I don't want. What is unpleasant? What is dangerous? What is threatening? What is makes me afraid? What I want to stop? Killing somebody else is often avoiding the pain of threat. So people go to war, not because there's an actual threat. There may not be an actual threat at all, but they want to avoid the pain of threat because it's unpleasant. So they go to war to kill the enemy, because fear is unpleasant sensation. So instead of, you know, imagining that they're being threatened, they're not really threatened, nobody's actually killing you, but to avoid the unpleasantness of fear, you go and kill the enemy first. Or the unpleasantness, I mean, the best example for me of the most useless and hugely suffering war that I can think of is the First World War, which was fought not because anybody was trying to take anything from anybody. It was fought because of pride of the British Empire and the Germans, and just pride, the ego, the national ego was threatened. and nobody was trying to take any food from anybody or kill any person. It was, and it was the most horrible war that's ever been fought, I think. So, you know, this is a big thing, the Vedana. They will lead, if we're not aware of it, they will lead us to kill somebody simply because we don't like unpleasant sensations of fear or insecurity. So it's, but in terms of Vedana, it's very fast and very immediate. And it's about control, that we want to control our life. We want to control life to avoid unpleasant and to have pleasant. And it's very fast and very immediate. And then quite immediately, it escalates very quickly. It begins to escalate, you know, Lao Tsim. To become more complex, kind of processing with pictures and papancha thoughts about it, just like, you know, you were saying, Baruch. Then it becomes a bigger story. The immediacy of liking, not liking becomes a bigger story. The person that makes us afraid, we begin to think about them, we begin to make strategy how to avoid it. It becomes intention, so our intention becomes to harm them, for example, or push them away, if that's a small example. And we don't really pay attention to this sort of immediate unpleasant sensations of fear. We build things around it. And then it becomes much stronger in the sense of karma. And karma, the immediacy of liking, not liking is also karma, but when we start being busy with it and constructing stories around it and constructing actions and words and making it a big thing, like, as I say, the whole person's life devoted to making money because they're deeply afraid of not having, or the pain of not having, so it becomes very karmically strong. That's what their whole life is busy doing. That means they're devoted, their one opportunity for awakening in this body, they devoted it to karmically constructing greed and desire and the karmic results can be very strong. But when it's become action, building, it builds up into things. And then it's the desire, aversion and ignorance, the three poisons, are based on Vedana. In a sense, Vedana, the first instinct of liking, not liking, builds into the three poisons, desire, aversion and ignorance, which are the basis of samsara. At the center of the wheel of samsara is desire, aversion and ignorance. It drives the whole thing. You could say it drives karma, it drives all of the other aspects. But you know, it's very difficult to put, and I don't want to sound like cause and effect here, because they're sibatiyut, because it's all flowing together. So it's quite, to pick out Vedana and say Vedana is the source of all being, of all the wheel of samsara, again it's picking it out and making it sibatiyut. It's all one thing, really. In the Tibetan world, they actually define it as it's kind of an, at least I learned this from some books, but also from Tsokni Rinpoche that was here teaching, and he was saying that there is a movement of hope and fear. I don't know if you've met this, but I mean, some of you know it more than me. I'm not really so familiar with the Tibetan view, but they do have this nice way of expressing this, which is that all life is motivated by hope and fear. These are the two strongest duality: hope, wanting; fear, not wanting. hoping for better, hoping for survival, hoping for that it will happen, hoping for a better future, hoping for pleasant, or a fear of unpleasant, fear of what might happen, fear of not being, fear of death, fear of... So the hope and fear, and that these dominate prana. According to the Tibetan view, they have a very strong relationship with prana, life force, and that the life force is driven by hope and fear, and hope and fear are very much up top. So that in Tibetan practice you have a lot of work with the belly, because they say that the hope and fear is all up here, and Vedana in a way is up here, and so there's quite a lot of practice of bringing the center of attention into the belly center, and there's less hope and fear and more just life force. So it's just another way of looking at it from...
It's funny, I hear this often, and many times people say dafka chitlaki shim, the sensations of the stomach of hope and fear, dafka, you feel it there. Remember, I've also heard it a few times, and always someone says, and it's true, and I don't, many times people dafka feel anxious and hope and fear in the sensations.
It's right, yeah, that's right.
It's interesting.
Although I would have thought that it comes down from the heart, mind, because the mind is needed to know what is what you're afraid of, then the belly responds biologically. But the first sensation of something is afraid is seen by the eyes and thought about and felt with the heart, and a sort of instinctive vedana of don't like this, and then the stomach comes in and yeah.
Something on the dynamic, it said like it's the tip of the glacier of the unconscious. What we sense is what the body makes available of a whole process that is not available consciously.
Yes.
Which you just described.
Yes. And the best example, the most powerful example in the suttas of the power of Vedana to control us is in the fire sermon, the sutta on Esh, and it's an amazing sutta. It's one of the most powerful suttas in the whole of the Dharma canon, and it said that this is the most powerful sutta that the Buddha spoke, because 1,000 people got instant awakening when he talked this sutta, and there's no other sutta in the tradition that has that power that awakens so many people in one go. Okay, that's the tradition. That's the tradition, you know. But it does. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to read the sutta and you're all going to awaken now. I have heard that on one occasion the Blessed One was staying in Gaya with 1,000 monks. And there he addressed the monks. Monks, everything is burning. What everything is burning? The eye is aflame, forms are burning, consciousness of the eye consciousness is burning, contact at the eye is burning, and whatever there is that arises in dependence on contact at the eye, experienced as at the eye in here, experienced as pleasure as pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, that too is burning. Burning with what? But the fire of passion, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion. Burning, I tell you, with birth, aging and death, with sorrows, with pains, with sadness, with distress and with despair. The ear is aflame, sounds are aflame, are burning, and so on and so on. The nose is burning, smells are burning, the tongue is burning, flavors are aflame, the body is burning, sensations of touch are burning. The intellect is burning, the sixth of the senses, that's the mind is burning. Ideas are burning. Consciousness at the mind is burning, is a flame. Contact at the level of mind is burning. And whatever there is that arises, independence on contact of the mind, experiences as pleasure, as pain, or as neither pleasure nor pain, that too is a flame. A flame with what? Burning with the fire of passion, the fire of aversion, the fire of delusion. Burning, I say, with birth, aging and death, with sorrows, with sadness, with pains, distress. Seeing this, the well-instructed disciple of the Dharma grows disenchanted with the I. Disenchanted means out of the spell. Can you say it in Hebrew? There is a word for it which is used in Hebrew. I forgot what the word is. That's the one, I think. Seeing this, exactly, the well-instructed disciple of the Dharma grows disenchanted with the eye, disenchanted with forms, disenchanted with consciousness at the eye, disenchanted with contact at the eye, and whatever there is that arises in dependence, depending on contact at the eye, experienced as pleasure, as pain, or neither pleasure nor pain. And with that too, he grows disenchanted. Disenchanted with the ear, with the nose, with the tongue, with the body. Goes disenchanted with the mind, disenchanted with ideas, disenchanted with consciousness at the mind, disenchanted with contact at the mind. And whatever there is that arises, depending on contact in the mind, experienced as pleasure or pain, or neither pleasure nor pain, he grows disenchanted with that too. And disenchanted, he becomes dispassionate. And through dispassion, meaning kind of not automatically controlled by passion, by wanting, so like equanimity, he is fully released. With full released, there is the knowledge, fully released. He sees that birth is ended, the holy life is fulfilled, the task is done, there is nothing further for this world. And that is what the Blessed One said. The monks delighted at his word. And while this explanation was given, the hearts of the 1,000 monks, through no clinging, no sustaining of any clinging, were fully released from the asavas, the attachments. So this is the fire sermon, and it's very strong, and it gives us this sense that as long as we are responding to the world with liking, not liking, there's something there that is not resting, that is not quiet, that is not released, that is not awakened. That we are keep responding, we are keeping the automatic response of liking, not liking, and then building from the whole worlds of action, thought, and so on. And the Buddha's image of fire is very strong. It's like what's burning us, what's keeping us going, what's keeping this fire, restless neediness and anxiousness and desire. And you can imagine nirvana, nibbana, as this absolute opposite of fire. Because the word nibbana means cooling. So it's cooling down the fire of neediness, of wanting, of not wanting. It's cooling it down. And where we are then is pure being. that doesn't need anything, that is not burning with the spell of. And of course, what happens with Vedana is in this chain of getting its papancha, of where we build everything on the first unconscious not liking liking that happens very, very quickly, is we build a self out of it. In psychology, in modern psychology, what I understand is that it's very well known in psychology that the world of affect, that's the world of feeling, is seen as integral to every perception. And modern psychology knows it because they talk about, the neurology knows this very well, because they know that in every moment of perception, the amygdala, is it? Is stimulated, is taking part. Amygdala being a kind of the affect area, the emotional affect, the way they call it in psychology. It's the same, it's rikshis. In the brain, the emotional centers are stimulated in every moment of brain awareness. There isn't a moment that doesn't recruit also, lagayes, also the emotional centers into it. There isn't a brain function that doesn't have an emotional element in it as well. So it's very clear from neurology that exactly what the Buddha said, that in every paticca samuppada, as we build an experience, Vedana is in there. Even if it feels like it's not very special experience, but you'll find there, for example, where the attention goes, like I was just sort of suggesting in meditation, to look to see where the attention goes. It's being pulled by liking, not liking, by some small need, by some interest, by what is familiar, for example. What is already known is what's safe. The unknown is not safe. So even that, safety, I go to where it's known. I go to where it's easy, or go to where it's comfortable. And it's happening instant, really, really fast, and really automatic. I want to also add to it the next bit of the chain of paticca-samuppada, which is clinging, because they're so closely connected. Vedana is really immediate, liking, not liking, and it goes very, very quickly into clinging, which is, I want a bit more of it. If we're liking something, I want it to continue. Pleasant, I want it to be more. Unpleasant, I want less of it. That extra, I want more, I want less of it, is already clinging. So it's Vedana is very close to the next one in the chain called clinging. And it happens very quickly, and then it moves into the sense that I want more. So the thought of a tea and biscuit and a hafsaka that might be coming to you at this moment. Yes. Now, because I mentioned it, yeah. chocolate biscuit? Or I'm going to add to it now. The best coffee that you could think of. Done just right. So you can see the way you add to it, and it very, very quickly we can add, it goes into chains of liking, and then it keeps going. And that's clinging. And of course it's the source of attachment. So it all comes together, the source of attachment, clinging, it's the second noble truth, everything comes together. That's why in some way we always keep coming back to the four noble truths, even when we're dealing with paticca samuppada. They are so integral. The paticca samuppada tells us how the four noble truths happen. Paticca samuppada is the four noble truths in action, in a moment of consciousness, or a moment of being. So the Four Noble Truths and dependent arising are completely connected in the Buddhist teaching, because the Paticca-samuppada tells us how it's happening, the Four Noble Truths, how attachment is happening, how liberation is happening, how suffering is happening in real time. It's like the experiencing of the Four Noble Truths in the moment. But not, of course, as I said before, not only in the moment, because according to the Buddhist teaching, why we are born is desire. We are born because of desire. So a baby is born because there's somewhere or other desire for it to be. Life exists on this planet because somewhere or other there's desire pulling it to be. When there is total awakening, there's no longer desire or any need to become a body. So the Buddha said, I don't need to come back anymore. And he said, when the Buddha was awakened, he said, I've broken the structure of the building. The roof, the rafters, the korot gag are broken. This building doesn't need to be built anymore. It's like, what a release. I don't need to keep coming back, building, coming back, making a body, making a desire, again and going through it again and again and going back to kindergarten again and again. Lachzor kol hazman le beit sefer shel ha'chaim hazeh. It's the same in Kabbalah, it's the same in Hindu mysticism or Hindu. The desire created the world. The gods, Brahma, made the world because there was a movement of desire. And so life arises. So now, how to practice with Vedana? We're in the Vipassana world here, so now, I mean, this is really practice that we do know, that we talk about every retreat that I think I've ever talked about, that's more than one day, we would bring in liking and not liking, because it's one of the places that's easiest to practice and most direct. And it gets very, liking and liking get very strong. The more we're sensitive, so many examples of this, you know, you know yourself how it happens in a retreat, you know, when you get quieter and quieter and quieter, and then someone takes your favorite cup or moves your cushion. The most ridiculous thing that you don't, you know, it's completely ridiculous to worry about when someone moves your cushion, but you're very awake, sensitive, there's a lot of space there, and someone moves your cushion and it really upsets you. It's not that the cushion, moving the cushion is such a big thing, it's that you were really upset before but you didn't notice it. You were upset, but your usual mind is just not sensitive to the upset, but you were upset before, but it comes as a lightning fast small discomfort of someone moving your cushion, and you don't give it two thoughts in normal life. But as soon as you're sitting for a few days and your mind is become awake and aware, it becomes a big thing, because you notice Vedana working. And because you notice Vedana working, you can watch it. And because you can watch it, you can let it go. And if you let it go, you are deeply free of it. The fire isn't burning that much. You really put water on the fire. Nirvana. You see it and you let it go. So we do this in Vedana is really to free us from the control of liking, not liking in our life, and the enchantment. Pakhut happens if we watch Vedana. But sure. Mm-hmm. Ken.
זה רק אם אני אולי אחוזר במשהו
בוודאי.
לא הקטע של להכחיד אולי את ה...
לא, 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 את צודקת. זה בוודאי. אנחנו לא אומרים לבטל וידנה, אנחנו אומרים לשים לב לוידנה ולהתפתחות. Meaning, don't be enchanted by it. Of course it's going to happen. To the Buddha, when he was hungry, would eat. The sensations of liking would happen. But the Buddha, if he didn't have any food in his lunchbox, would think no more thoughts about it. But of course there will be sensations of liking and not liking happening all the time. It's biological. Like the amoeba goes to sugar and not to vinegar. So it's not, we're not saying to the amoeba, don't do anything. I think all of us, why not enjoy a cup of coffee? I'm sure the Buddha would enjoy a cup of coffee. You know, but what do you do with it? Is it controlling you? Is it, are you busy with it? Are you, is that you constructing your life? Or are you, have you dispassion? Meaning the flow of liking and not liking, don't do anything. They are there, they will tell you to drink or eat, but they don't stick. They don't motivate. They don't make chains of papancha. They don't make attachment or aversion. They don't drive birth and death. They don't drive me. They don't drive my life. I have to be born because of need. I need this, therefore I have to be here. They don't make defenses, haganatiyut. They don't make protection. They don't make issues. They don't, you know, they just don't do anything. Liking, not liking is happening as a stream, just like impressions. And when we're coming into the eye, is impressions. The Buddha didn't say, don't have contact with the world. Contact is another of the paticca-samuppada. Contact happens with the world. But it doesn't need to burn. Loboya. Doesn't need to burn us up. So the place really, it's really like one of the teachers had the image of the Teflon mind. I think it's a kind of American, quite a good American Dharma image, the Teflon mind, non-stick, like a non-stick saucepan, because they're non-stick machvat.
But it's a little dangerous that the non-stick, because as you said, I'm already late. What you referred before, is it yaiv? Is it really beneficial? Because pain has a role in our system.
In the gummary.
It's an alarming that something isn't wrong, I mean, in terms of infection, yeah. Whatever. So yeah. It's true not to be controlled, but it's very important, I think, what you said, is it beneficial? How does it serve us? What's the purpose?
Well, it's a little tricky, because you're listening to pain, but what are you doing with it? What are you doing with this pain?
Exactly. I think here is the dangerous. Do I say it's Teflon? I said, just a minute. I'll put my mind into it and maybe I can see the different shades of it. Is it a harmful pain or is it a useful pain? Like sometimes in yoga when we practice, they ask you to pay attention. Is it kind of a pull or push in the muscle that feels it's harmful? Or is it a... Maybe it's painful, but it might be a good pain. So,
I think the Teflon, the non-stick mind, allows you actually to be more interested in pain, and less reactive, and it's less on the automatic level.
Yeah.
And you allow yourself to be interested in the pain, and often it can help you decide what to do. I will not take Akamol. I will relate to this pain. For example, so we're looking at Vedana with a certain quietness in the meditation mode, in the Dharma practice. We're not. It's not, as you say, it's not a problem that there shouldn't be liking, not liking. It's that we're not being burnt up by it. In the beautiful, powerful image of the Buddha, we're not burnt up by it. Our whole life is busy with liking, not liking. It doesn't burn us up. We're looking at it with quiet eyes. We're not tossed. In the image that I gave out last class on being tossed on the waves, right, of experience that just take us away, that like we'd have no power left, because we're just being tossed on the waves, floating on the waves of life, just being like a kind of waves of liking, not liking. Is that beautiful image that I gave you out on, I think, last lesson. So we allow things to be, pain and pleasure, to be what they are. We allow them just to be there and pass and change. It's just they're there, just like sensation in the eye, because it goes with seeing in the eye is Vedana. It's like part of biology. It's not something that we have to worry about, but we worry about what we do with it. But we don't say there shouldn't be contact, there shouldn't be an eye. An eye exists, a tongue exists, contact with taste exists, and feeling with contact exists, happens immediately. So we don't cancel it out, sort of do surgery and take out the amygdala from our brains.
even just noticing is a bit tiring, like just really realizing you are a nasha tabinet kol asman bifal.
Nachon.
Gam kem ze ktsat madim kol asman lichatsim kaptorim kol kol davar. Harutze lo rutze, ze gam yavchim bezeh.
Bidyuk, and this, exactly. Exactly. And this tiredness that we feel is one of the ways leading us to dispassion. This tiredness is tiredness with samsara. It's a quite an important experience that we just fed up with being a tool, a puppet, because they're buba al chutim of kol chuka his dokokut. Enough, die. News, die. And we can die. Actually, it's a good word, because we can want to die. Enough already of this life where I'm just like a kind of a buba on a string all the time. Every desire, not desire, want, not want. Enough! I want to die already, and it's a good feeling, because that feeling of enough already is where we turn away, and we are beginning to welcome something else which is not there. And that's why death, by the way, is our big friend here. Death is a big friend. And I was talking about it with Ifat just before you all came in. How the death experience for some of us who have a really, some people have a really strong death experience, like near-death experience, or they go through a death experience in their life, and it's one of the most powerful places of awakening, because it's like, it's enough of this game, and you really go through it and experience it, and then something lets go from the automat of burning in this life. Burning, burning, burning.
Is there a couple of days ago I happened to hear a lecture on the internet on neuropsychology. It's something I came across, and every week there's a lecture. And a couple of days ago, the psychologist was saying that, not to mistake liking with wanting. That they're two very different things.
Absolutely.
That liking is fine. It's wanting that causes the suffering. And later on a commentator said it's very much like what the Buddha said about craving. But so is Vedana both liking and wanting? Or is clinging the wanting and liking the Vedana?
Yeah, liking, not liking is Vedana. Although the way a psychologist would put it, as opposed to a Buddhist, he would probably already go towards clinging. In other words, a Buddhist would take it even earlier, at the very fast place of immediate liking, not liking, pushing, pulling. The Buddhist, because of meditation practice and because of the Buddhist teaching, would take it even earlier. When a psychologist would say liking, not liking, the psychologist would probably put Vedana and clinging together and saying that's all right, don't go to craving, which is the next one, which is much even more attached, because a psychologist would say that's not healthy. Everyone would agree craving's not healthy, addiction is not healthy, getting consumed by desire for money is not healthy, getting consumed by fear of an enemy is not healthy. So everyone would agree there, a Buddhist and a psychologist. But where a Buddhist and a psychologist might differ is a Buddhist would go even further towards the very beginnings of that process, and that's Vedana. Whereas a psychologist in the West would say, yes, but clinging is also okay if you don't take it too far. See the difference there. In terms of practice, in terms of our own Dharma practice, we are invited to allow experiences to develop into craving and clinging and so on in order for us to see them. It's not that we have to be very, very kind of controlling and stop craving and clinging by saying it's totally bad and then being very moralistic about it. It is there in the Dharma, of course, that we should be we should go to what's wholesome, kusala, what's healthy, what's wholesome, and craving is not wholesome. So there is also in the Dharma quite a lot of saying, you know, be aware of the suffering that craving causes and stop craving. And there is times when the Buddha said, you know, grit your teeth and don't do it. Yes, just crush them. There is that. But there's an awful lot there of saying, don't be a controller, because it's not helpful to be a controller, because that's another kind of battle that you fight inside yourself. You're not trying to be a kind of real Protestant super kind of or yogi, Indian yogi, which has bad as a kind of a value in there, and this is bad. And the Dharma doesn't really go there that much. It does a bit, but it doesn't go there that much. Instead, it goes towards allowing truth of the Four Noble Truths to teach you how to guide you to liberation. And the truth of attachment has to be seen, and in order for it to be seen, it has to be experienced. So the Buddha didn't say force yourself not to be attached. He said notice suffering in attachment. In other words, allow attachment. You are attached, so see it. See attachment and see the pain of it, rather than trying to stop yourself by force from being attached, by being a super sitting on bed of nails super ascetic yogi, Indian yogi, or a super kind of Protestant extreme fundamentalist and saying this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad, sin, 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 chet, 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 chet.
Sounds Catholic or
it's and Jewish but and Muslim, but the Buddha Dharma didn't go there. And one of the nice Krishnamurti says this very beautifully, he's got a beautiful image. He said, let the feelings live and die, see the way they live and die. Every thought and feeling must flower for it to live and die. Flowering of everything in you, the ambition, the greed, the hate, the joy, the passion. Because in the flowering is the death of it and the freedom. And it's only in freedom that we can flourish, that flowering happens, not in suppression or in control. And the letting things to flower and then freedom is is the goodness. And it's not easy to allow difficult things in us to flower. But only when it flowers do we see its colour, its shape, its depth, its personality, its peculiarity, its individuality. That's in relation to pain, for example. When we, just in your question, in your comment, which is wise, when we see the pain flowering, we see its colour, its shape, its character, its personality. But if it's suppressed, it will not reveal itself to us. And when it has shown itself completely, there is an ending of it, only to reveal another fact, emptiness, or loneliness, or fear. As each thing is allowed to flower in freedom, completely, the conflict between the observer and the observed ceases. And there's no censor there, censura. There's only observation, only seeing. And freedom can only be in the completion and not in repetition or suppression or control. And there's completion in flowering and dying. It's very well expressed by Krishnamurti there. So the language of the heart, let it flower and die. Let the kaleidoscope be there of the language of the heart. And where this is important, it's important to us because the heart liberates. We can be in the Dharma too busy with the liberation of mind, and we don't pay attention to liberation of heart. The heart can bring us to liberation just as much. And the way the heart brings us to liberation is just like Krishnamurti was saying. We allow a feeling, Vedana, to flower and die. We allow our not liking or our liking to flower and die. We allow a fear to flower and die, and then we are free of it. Hit prakrut happens by meeting it closely. We see someone we're in a deep long retreat, someone's sitting on our meditation cushion. We allow our anger and irritation, the self is invaded, the self feels attacked or invaded, someone's taking my space. We notice it because we're paying attention. Normally we don't notice it. We pay attention, we let it flower, and we let it die. And just in the moment of noticing, in the moment of being aware, and that is non-suppression, is not cutting down, saying I mustn't be, as just as your comment. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, I want to just finish, and then in the Satipatthana Sutta, this is expressed in practice in Kaya Vipassana. It's called, they talk about seeing the body, or he, seeing the body with the body. And in Vedana, it's seeing the feelings in the feelings. That means, again, not doing anything with it, but really in meditation space, really feeling the feeling as it comes and as it goes. In other words, getting close to the feeling life, and you call it feeling tone. And that's the expression in English that's used for this, for Vedana. The quality, the first inside the moment of seeing, it is quite hard to notice it, but it's there inside the moment of paying attention to anything, is a feeling tone, a first sense of feeling or of interest in some way. It's a little bit interesting, a little bit, why am I going there, not there? Why am I saying these words now, if I try and look inside, it's because I have an intention. The intention is to say something. Thoughts are coming together. The intention is bringing it, and it feels like the right thing I have to do right now. So the words are being constructed by a whole consciousness that includes intention. And if I could sort of somehow undo all of that process, which of course then I wouldn't talk and I wouldn't know what to say and I have nothing to say, but undo that process, there would be no intention, no interest to say anything, and just quietness. So it's not that there has to be quietness, but the observing of action and of a word and of a seeing and of a thought, observing it, will hopefully give a little quality in it of I want to go there, or I don't want to go there.
Maybe,
well, that's interesting to me.
Maybe help you feel the quietness inside the action.
It will reveal it. Yes, it will. It would. It and it's very. This awareness of Vedana really cuts the papancha right at the root of it. Because as soon as you're aware of liking, not liking, you don't need to do anything with it anymore. So it cuts the thing at its root. Well, you allow it a little bit to flower and die, but as you watch it, that it doesn't need to really, you don't need to build anything, add anything to it. So therefore it kind of flowers and dies more and more. The more you practice, the more these things just flower and die, flower and die, flower and die. They get easier. And same, that's why, you know, people often ask, and we all ask, well, you know, already I've been, this anger has been with me all so many years, I wish it would go. But the more you see the first roots of the anger liking or not liking or protection of the self, the more you see the protection happening, the quicker the anger will go. Because you will just see it happening again and again. Oh, here is anger coming, going, flowering, dying, flowering, dying, flowering, dying. And you get less interested in it. So the vipassana process, mindfulness itself does it. Seeing liking and not liking cuts the thing, the chain at the root, cuts the chain of samsara, cuts the chain of paticca-samuppada. So Vedana is the easiest place to cut the chain of paticca-samuppada. Vedana and clinging, shall we say, the two together. Vedana is more difficult because it's very, very fast. Clinging is easier. We all know how to work with that. That's the Kita Aleph in our Buddhist teaching. It's what we talk about all the time. Four Noble Truths, clinging, you know, that's where we work. It's much easier than any of the other stations on the on Paticca-samuppada. And we gradually see how it leads also to not self. It leads to anatta. Because when we see that the conditions create liking, not liking, then it's not me that's doing it anymore. Like you go past your favorite coffee shop, there is a memory of a taste of coffee, there is a desire for coffee arising because of memory in the mind. Eyes look at the coffee shop, so you're seeing it. Memory comes in, kicks in. But if you notice what's going on with a mindfulness, you will see that the whole chain has happened because the eye saw a coffee shop, the memory came by itself, the conditions that you happen to be in created this whole chain. Where's the self in there? So it can lead, if you see that in the moment of seeing, these chains are happening by themselves, there's less control by the self. The self is just conditions happening, making sight, sound, thought, memory, just happening. Because you happen to be at the coffee shop, coffee image arises, does, makes memory. If you were in a shoe shop, passed by a shoe shop, wouldn't happen. Or if you passed by a something else aversive that you don't like, aversive thoughts will happen. It won't be a thought of coffee outside a shoe shop. And it's very important that we understand that the dispassion happens because there is both liking and not liking and neutral. The Buddha said it's because we're born into a human body that gives us opportunity for enlightenment. What is it that gives us opportunity for enlightenment? The fact that we're born between liking and not liking. That it's that we have a possibility of getting out of it. That the fact that we are liking, not liking, liking, not liking, is giving us another way to be. Whereas if it was entirely instinctive, like in an animal, very much harder. But because we're human and we can experience liking, not liking, and neutral, we have an opportunity for we have power for awakening. And I think there's a nice, I read somewhere in the Jewish tradition, the Midrash says something that every human being can basically awaken, or shall we say, meet their divine by walking a narrow line between ice and fire. It's interesting that I didn't think about it, but the Midrash has a similar image of fire.
But ice is burning too, because you are, we are just the same.
But ice has an image of frozen, maybe ice is negative, yeah, the negative. Yeah. 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 And, you know, between joy and woe we safely go, said William Blake. Like, because we can dance with joy and pain. Between joy and pain, dancing between joy and pain is our way of liberation. The fact that we can do that, the fact that we can let joy and pain be experiences and not just be totally like an amoeba instinct, gives us the power.
And also the ice and the fire, they balance each other. I mean, they lose their own quality when they're next to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we find ourselves bouncing from one to the other. So I kind of more or less want to coming to the end of the talk. The Goenka, those of you that practice with Goenka, is quite familiar with the Goenka practice, which is Burmese, gives a lot of importance to Vedana as body sensation. And the Burmese practice, and that's taken into the West through Goenka largely, is about, it's very much this. It's very classical. It's like, imagine that your body is like a sensor, the chayshan, that is all the time picking up experiences of the world as liking, not liking. So that there's a lot of emphasis in the sensations in the body as being kind of chayshanim, sensors that pick up liking, not liking, and then not doing anything with it. So in other words, seeing the way an unpleasant experience is sensed immediately in the sensations of the body is very much classical Goenka practice and Burmese practice. Immediately senses in the body can be like felt like, so someone threatens you, for example, or there's a shout, unpleasant shout, a noise, and you feel it in sensations in the body, but you don't do anything with it. The sensations are vibrating strongly, they're unpleasant, you notice they're unpleasant, and they flower and die. That's classic the Goenka Burmese practice with Vedana. It's what I was doing, you know, retreat after retreat after retreat. And it's really working on this very thin slice. And where Goenka differs from the Thailand and the other really schools of Dharma is that they take the first and second foundation, Kaya and Vedana, and really this part of Paticchasamuppada as the exclusive practice. Whereas what we're doing is actually taking the whole of Paticchasamuppada, because we've already discussed in this course different places to practice, practicing with sankharas, with consciousness, and so there's much more non-dual teaching, much open practice in the Thai Achan Chah tradition, that rather than a very taking one slice, but that's what happens also in Abhidhamma, to take there tends to be traditions like monasteries that take one slice of the Abhidhamma and say that's the main place to practice, right? So there we have it, you know. Let the waves of liking, not liking arise and disappear and leave us free. Dispassionate, hit pat khut khut, disenchanted, let just experiencing it in our life and in our Dharma practice. And that's working with Vedana. So let's just take a moment of silence. Thank you. Ifat, do you want to put the kettle on for tea if it's needed? And I want to suggest that we have a tea break for, the first 10 minutes or whatever, 10, 15 or whatever of the tea break, I would like to invite you all to have it in silence and really experience Vedana as we hold the tea in our hands. How are we liking, not liking the smell of it? Is it the best tea? Are we disappointed with it? So it's not so good. The biscuit, do we like it? What's the taste of the biscuit? Liking, not liking. It's sweetness of a date, of a tamar, but maybe it's too sweet, so that we actually liking turns to not liking. You know, let the dynamic of Vedana happen to us in tasting. I think is quite a good place to do this. So let's have the first 10 minutes in silence, and just practicing Vedana as we taste and touch and smell tea and biscuits, whatever is there, and then I'll ring a bell and we can chat, because with the talking it will all probably go. So let's stay with silence if you don't mind.